We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace. And today we've got a double crossover podcast edition with Locked On Pacers host Tony East and Indy Corners podcast host Mark Schindler. So Tony, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Excited to be a part of this massive crossover. And I'd like to thank Mark, who's about to talk, for having a paid Zoom account that could let us all link up for this.
Yeah, Mark. I'm the plug. If you need to record a pod without paying, hit me up. I hope nobody from Zoom hears that, but very excited to be on the Sham God Pod. Is that, could we call it a Sham God Pod? It's a double cross. I mean, Sham God.
Oh, that's clever.
I can think if they can pull it off. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, let's jump into it, guys. So, I mean, we've been talking about it on our own podcast. I feel like I've been kind of overkill talking about the new hire, but just in case some people haven't heard your opinions, I'll start with you first, Tony. You know, Nate Bjorgren, Pacers new head coach. What are your thoughts on the hire?
I'm into it. I think I liked D'Antoni personally because I didn't consider him a retread, but behind him, my list was all assistants just because it mixes it up. It gets a fresh face with the team and really allows them to go a totally new direction and an unknown direction. And I think that's good for a Pacers team and organization that kind of is stale and runs through the same kind of stuff a lot, or at least has in the past. So I think it's cool that they're kind of evolving. And the way he talked in his introductory presser about, you know, not being rigid in anything, in his rotations, in his strategy, he's willing to take risks. He's willing to change it up in his coaching style, even just on a game to game basis. I think that's really interesting and adds a tactical layer to the Pacers they've been missing that will make them incredibly fun for me, at least, to watch. So I don't know how good he's going to be. He's never been an NBA head coach, but I'm into it from a tactical standpoint and from an entertainment standpoint.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with Tony, man. I'm just excited that this team's going in a direction that's a new direction. I mean, we're so used to this team, not saying treading water is the wrong way to put it, but I mean, internal hires, not going into a lengthy coaching search. So I think it's kind of cool seeing a breath of fresh air like this. And I sent Tony a gift of this. If you've ever played Hitman, Nate Bjorkgren might be agent 47, so check the back of his head for a barcode. But no, I'm just excited to see how things play out on court. I mean, obviously it's a lot of PR speak in right. The presser, but overall I think there's a lot of stuff that was not just surface level that he talked about that I think the team will do. But it's just going to be depending on who's on the roster next year, and we'll get into it. But yeah. I think it's a good hire. Definitely surprised me. And I'm ready to see it, man. But I'm also ready for these guys to have more than 2 months off. But that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I mean, speaking on that real quick before I jump back into the Bjorkgren thing, I don't know if you saw the quote tweet or not from a Ringer NBA show, but Danny Green was on there today and was like, Yeah, if we're starting up in December, I think a lot of players aren't going to be there. I thought that was really interesting for him to say that. But I know specifically for them because they were in the bubble for I don't even know how many days, but they've got to be exhausted. So what are your guys' thoughts on that? I'll start with you first, Mark.
Yeah, that's a great question. I was talking with Tim Cran just about this yesterday – or 2 days ago, I think. It's just – I don't know. I mean, I get the fact, like, yeah, these guys are millionaires. They're doing a dream job for most people, but I also would argue that – we don't see a lot of the things that go into them doing that, especially when you look at the Lakers and Heat. I mean, the turnaround is ridiculous. You look at, you know, going into the bubble, you might consider that an off season or time off, but those guys, I mean, for the most part, almost every guy was training just as hard as they would be for getting ready for a regular season. I mean, they weren't taking time off because there was uncertainty. They had no idea when the game was coming back. So they had to stay hot and stay in shape. I don't know. I'm really pretty apprehensive in terms of how this could be handled injury-wise and ways fatigue could set in. But then also in terms of Danny Green's comments, I mean, if it does start that early, people can go on and off about load management all they want. But I do think we'll see much deeper rosters, at least to start the year, for teams that went really deep, and maybe less emphasis on trying to get the one seed for some of those teams, because you're going to have to preserve your health. And I don't know. It's going to there's a lot of things that are going to factor into it, but it's all about money. So,
yeah, Tony.
Yeah, the move forward is interesting in the impact it has on the league. I liked John Hollinger in The Athletic wrote about it. I liked his point that it's really beneficial for teams that are returning the coach and their roster. I like the Jazz, the Magic. These teams aren't going to have a lot of roster turnover and are keeping their coach. Their style's the same. They're going to hit the ground running, right? Their preseason's not as important. They're not integrating new guys. They're not integrating a new system. They'll be ready. The Pacers have half of that. But I understand what Danny Green is saying. And, the Lakers roster might change quite a bit. Like, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to really convince guys to say, hey, okay, you know, like, I don't know who will be signing a one-year deal this offseason, but, like, say Danilo Gallinari, like, takes a one-year deal to try to win a title somewhere, and, like, all of a sudden – He's more susceptible to injury because the offseason's shorter. He might look worse in a system where, you know, he's learning it on the fly and all this stuff. Like, I get why players might be tepid and cold-footed about jumping into a season with such a short offseason, especially for some of those Lakers guys who just finished playing 2 weeks ago. But I think that ultimately for the league, obviously the money talks, it makes sense. The league making money is good for the players making money, so I'm sure the Players Association will buy in, but I totally understand both sides of the coin where guys are going to get started and other guys wouldn't. And, you know, there's a delete eight teams you have to think about. So there's so much at play that basically anything a player would say, I can be like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And you got to think there's a lot of teams that didn't even come to the bubble that haven't played since March. So I'm sure they're just itching to get going. I mean, that's almost 9 months that it'd probably be until they get to restart, or probably longer than 9 months. And, you know, they want to play 72 games because, of course, the TV deals is what generates the most revenue. But it's just crazy. I think Bobby Marks said today on the podcast with Zach Lowe that he would anticipate free agency starting November, like 22nd or 23rd. So we're talking like 4 or 5 days immediately after the NBA draft. And that basically gives them a full month to get, you know, their contracts signed and then, you know, report to the team, and then the season starts. So, I mean, that's a pretty short window. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, Kent certainly came on my podcast and was talking about that a couple weeks ago, saying that he's heard from NBA sources that they want to start the season early, and a lot of people gave us pushback, but I think it makes a lot of sense for the revenue part of it. But let's get back into Coach Nate Bjorgren. So, you know, I think you mentioned it, Mark. You said a lot of, you know, PR speak. There was some of the, you know, responses. But I think one of the things that stood out to me a lot was Kevin Pritchard acting as if he wanted Nate Bjorgren to be there for a long time. It seemed almost like they kind of want to have a long-term marriage and not something where they're looking for a new coach every 4 years. I think it took them 56 days exactly to come up with this hire. So, Tony, did you get those same vibes in Pritchard's reaction or comments on that?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I'm imagining that PR or not, he wants to hire a coach who's going to be around for a long time, right? I mean, it's just good for the team that if your coach is really good and he's around for a while, then like, yeah, great. But yeah, you know, I mean, to me, we kind of did this on Locked On Pacers, although less so with Pritchard's comments and more so with Bjorgren's. we kind of looked to the past to see what things that were said. Like they've coached actual games before, you know what I mean? Like I can look at what Bjorgren is saying and what he's done and either match them up or not match them up and say, yeah, you know what I mean? Like this is not PR speak, or okay, this is PR speak. With Pritchard, it's a little harder because he's never done a coaching hire for the Pacers. His goals publicly and privately could be different. You know, those things are impossible to say. But I get what you're saying, that I do get the vibe that he kind of wants him to be around for longer. And I think part of that is what he said in like the pre-hire process about communication relating to players and setting a new culture. I hate the word culture in this instance, but
hashtag heat culture.
Well, whatever, but you know, setting a new, like, and whatever his culture is for the team. And if it's good, and if he's as good as KP thinks he is, then yeah, you'll want him around for a long time, more than 4 years for sure. I get why Larry Bird had that fake rule, but it doesn't make sense to me if the coach is good. You know what I mean? Like if Carlisle was still the Pacers coach, that'd be great. So yeah, I get the vibe that if, you know, he wants him to be around for the long haul, and if he gets the right guy, he'll keep him around for a while.
Yeah. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, not to be a total pessimist, but I think there's a reason why every coach gets a job. It's because they're great at talking themselves up and talking up what they're going to do. I think we saw a couple things that show that Nate is the right hire and will do some really great things. Obviously, if you haven't already, please read Caitlin's piece. It, pretty much if you're not caught up on something Pacers, read Caitlin's piece because she's always on top of it. But yeah, I mean, that ultimately we can take as much as we want from the press conference, but until we see it, I just have no real idea what to think on. I mean, I hit up one what were you saying?
I was agreeing with you. Like we can dissect what he says all we want, but like, yeah, we just can't know.
I mean, I reached out to some people who have worked with him, and they spoke highly. So, but again, everybody's going to speak highly when they're talking about someone who just got a job. So, but again, I don't really think I can point to anything negative right now.
Yeah. So I was listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast earlier today, and I thought it was really interesting. I was catching up on an episode, and they were talking about the recent coaching hires of course, Stan Van Gundy, and then of course, Nate Bjorgren. And one of the things Hollinger said is, as a front office guy, you know, he thought the Pacers were going to look at an assistant to come in and take this Pacers coaching job. But he said one thing that Bjorgren has is he has head coaching experience. So that'll be a lot easier for him to transition into that role since he's already done it before, since he's not just been a career-long assistant. You know, I talked about how I was high on Chauncey Billups. This is a guy that had zero coaching experience. And, you know, with Bjorgren, he's, you know, he's a basketball junkie from everything we heard. But I do think that that's a great point, because he brought up, when he was in Memphis, how they hired Dave Yeager and moved him into that seat. He said because of his previous head coaching experience, he really felt that transition was easy. So any thoughts on that, guys?
I could jump in. Yeah, I mean, that was something that actually stood out to me more in the press conference than most of the stuff he said is, like, you know, we've heard about his adaptability. J. Michael reported it first. Kevin Pritchard said it the next day in the press conference. But, like, to hear his explanation of it in the G League of how – when you're a head coach in the G League, right, all of a sudden your guy could be off to Europe. And then the next day you have a new guy. And then the next day you have a different new guy. Right? You have to change your roster so much. That head coaching experience is hard, right? Even if it's not the NBA stuff with all the media, the different locker room control, the guys are making millions. There's all these different things that go on. But, like, you've coached a roster of men, not like college age guys or anything like that, like men, to success and made them look like good basketball players on the court. But you've proven that you can deal with shakeups and deal with the challenges that come with running a team. I think that definitely matters more than being an assistant. So that is definitely something that rings true to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally echo that. I mean, I think I wonder if it's going to happen more, but it's just, this is just me, like, galaxy brain, Malcolm Gladwell moment. I really think that basketball and hopefully American sports in general are going to kind of transition to European soccer models and just building things up from the ground up, because that's how you grow. It's like, how often do we see somebody come in with no coaching experience? This is not me trying to throw shade at Steve Nash, but like, come in with no coaching experience, become a head coach and do well. Without coming up and learning, like, I mean, the G League is literally, I don't want to say battleground, cause that sounds like extremely, like, overkill, but I mean, that's tactically learning how to think things through as a coach and just, go through, like Tony's saying, all these difficult things that you experience as a G League organization and head coach. I mean, that builds you up to be ready to coach in the NBA. So I think there's definitely some validity to that.
Yeah. So I've been asking this question, everybody I've talked to, just trying to get their thoughts and what they've seen so far and what they've heard so far from Nate Bjorgren. Is there a player or players you think that will benefit the most from this coaching hire? And I'll start with you, Tony.
Player that will benefit the most?
Yeah.
I haven't really thought a ton about that. I mean, McDermott's usually my fallback with these kind of questions, because if McDermott is played like the way I think McDermott should be played, he's going to be awesome, taking 9 3-pointers a game. But it's really hard to say until he totally implements something. I kind of feel like if they're a little bit more creative, that bodes well for guys with high IQ like Sabonis and Brogdon, or guys with unique skills like McDermott. And McConnell could be another one. But I think my answer is probably going to be Brogdon. I've thought about it out loud to you guys, because he kind of meshes the two things that I think would make McDermott good and would make those other guys good. He's got a high IQ, so complicated stuff won't be tough to him. Right? I remember Mike Conley goes to the Jazz, and he talks about how to play in Quinn Snyder's system, you need a PhD, right? It takes a long time to figure that stuff out, but once you get it, it clicks, and all of a sudden, it's great. And it took Conley a while to get going, and then he had a really strong January, February before stuff got shut down. Mm-hmm. I think with Brogdon, you know, if he can really figure out what Bjorgren's doing, and if it's as complicated as Bjorgren's making it seem like it might be, complicated might be the wrong word. You know, there's kind of a negative connotation there, but intricate and unique, then that caters well to Brogdon's skill set of high IQ playing, and more threes would help him too, you know, not being pigeonholed into you know, mid-rangers and taking the open shot. So I think Brogdon is my answer.
All right, Mark.
I kind of have two. One is conversely, so it's not more in terms of could be detrimented, and not just on Nate's hire. I think it's more just from the press conference. I think Goga.
Yes.
I do think Goga is going to be pushed down the roster, and this is something that I've talked about in terms of stuff I don't want to happen, and this team trying to really cultivate their draft picks. But it, based on everything we heard, it does not seem like that's going to happen, at least not to start the year. And the person I'd say might see some improvement, or not even necessarily improvement, but benefit. I kind of want to say Aaron Holiday.
Yeah, that's mine.
Because I think that he could maybe carve out a more consistent role. Because, I mean, we saw Aaron had like maybe the most fluctuating role that I've seen out of somebody. I mean, he went from that stretch in December where he started like 12 games when Malcolm was out, to at the end of the pre hiatus season, he was hardly in the rotation because Vic and Malcolm were both back starting. So I'm really hopeful if Nate's really going to run something like 11 guys deep, or he's willing to play that many guys, I think that's huge for Aaron, because he knows he's going to play every night.
Yeah, no, that's who I was really thinking about, especially when we talk about development.
That's so interesting. Go ahead.
And same with Goga. I was just thinking about the young guys that I feel like the Pacers believe in the talent they've drafted, but they haven't been given an opportunity. And I mean, I think Pritchard's kind of mentioned that, you know, they didn't play their young guys. You know, they were like, 29th in payroll and like 7th or 8th overall with the best record in the NBA. So, I mean, they don't spend on players and they have late draft picks. And I just feel like he wants someone in there that's going to be able to develop these young guys and actually use them. So they're not just, you know, McMillan, the mandate was to win, right? I mean, that's what everything was. And he was playing these veterans because he wanted them, you know, to win him games, because he knew probably, I mean, look at what happened to him. If he didn't get the job done, or if he didn't at least get out of the first round, he was probably going to get canned. So it wasn't really about developing Sumner, developing Aaron Holiday, developing Goga. It's about, you know, am I going to play Sabonis 35 minutes a night, even when we're up 18 against Washington, you know, like one of those things. So that's where I was kind of intrigued by that question. I asked Kelsey O'Brien, who covers the G League for basketballnews.com, when she was on our podcast last week, and she came out and said Miles Turner is the person she thinks that's going to benefit the most from Nate Bjorgren. She said that he's going to unlock all that potential, in her opinion. Now, it's funny, because I believe Sean Woodley was on your podcast, Tony, and he was talking about, you know, maybe snagging Miles from the Pacers for the Raptors. So
I keep making faces thinking about Aaron Holiday as the answer.
Well,
the Raptors rotation from last year. Unless Jeremy Lamb's like dead next season.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Well, when's he going to come back fully healthy?
The one thing I think about, though, I mean, just in looking at the Raptors roster, like, they have a lot more wingy guys.
They do.
And the Pacers totally have, like, a lot more guardy guys. Like, I don't know. I mean, which sounds so reductive. But, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, that's something we're always talking about. They have a lot of guys who are, like, combo guards and, like, really small threes.
Right.
And, like, one guy who can kind of pass as a four and then two fives. So, I have no idea what their roster is going to look like. I guess, you know, actually, if I could change it around, I'd maybe say Sumner. Because I think he is somebody, he was always out of the rotation, even if he was healthy, or not if he was healthy, but like, Nate was, part of that's because he was always injured. So when he was back, he wasn't like fully back. But I mean, he's somebody who could definitely benefit from a deeper rotation. But I do think, like, I don't know. I really like Aaron. I just love Aaron and his game. And he's surprisingly versatile for someone his size.
Look, I agree that at some point, and I've heard from former Pacer players that one of their gripes with McMillan is he doesn't play young guys, right? That's not a secret, you know, but I do think at some point with Aaron, cause he's it's obvious he's good. He's an NBA player, that at some point they'll have to stare at Jeremy Lamb and TJ McConnell, go, all right, one of you's not going to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know when that will happen. You know, McConnell's expiring next year. So,
and his deal hasn't been fully guaranteed yet.
I mean, so, I'm right. Yeah,
no,
that.
I know.
There's no way they're going to not, but whatever. Maybe not next year, but I mean, at some point they're going to have to stare down that barrel and go, all right, you have to play. So maybe he'll be the, you know, like I said, he's not going to be rigid. Maybe he'll be the one to do it, but it's not as easy as
already 25.
Right. And he's not really young. He's kind of, it's hard to just go, you know, all right, our vet we just signed last summer, you're out of the rotation, and it's possible, but I guess, you know, I'm looking at the Raptors, right? They had 12 guys play 10 or more minutes per game last year. And there's a lot of injury stuff in there, right? Gasol only played in like half the game. So Boucher's minutes were able to go up a little bit. They were able to sneak, you know, Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas into some games for more minutes. So that's not like totally relevant. He's not actually playing 12 guys a game. So it's possible he's able to play Aaron over 10 minutes and be creative like that. But it's hard for me to just sniff out immediately what his role is going to be. Again, unless Lamb is like dead weight next year.
Well, okay, so I have two things off that.
Alex will butt it
I'm
eventually.
Sorry. I just like this is
no, go for like, it.
People get tired of hearing me on this podcast.
I do wonder. So. I personally, this is just me. Would you have Aaron above TJ McConnell in the rotation?
I think like looking to the future, I wrote last year, I remember the first seven games of the season, like they were both god awful, like terrible. Yeah, right. Were. So I was like, yeah, why are they playing TJ? Play the young guy, let him grow. But then TJ was clearly better for a while. It made some sense. But it's kind of hard, like, as Aaron continues to get better, you know, the gap suddenly is so small that you're like, okay, you have to lean on you.
Yeah.
I don't know what the team says about that gap, right? What are they thinking? How much better do they think McConnell is? And they've discovered they can play together, right? That's why I think Lamb is such an important part of the equation. So it's kind of hard to say, I think, is my stupid answer to your question.
Yeah, and well, like, my other thing, too, is – just based off reporting, I mean, there was really heavy interest from Minnesota in acquiring Aaron Holiday at the trade deadline, and the Pacers didn't budge. So I guess
why do I not know that? Why did I not know?
I know I saw it on the score way back in at the trade deadline. So I don't know that.
I think
the
sheer
validity on that, but I didn't hear New York, but I knew.
I think
Jay
Michael
was.
Reported the New York one, and then the year before it was the Aaron Holiday. It's a Memphis deal for Conley that was kind of brought up. And Jay Michael had that one as well.
I remember I heard the Memphis stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that to me is part of the reason I'm kind of intrigued. It's like the last two seasons, Aaron Holiday's name has been floated around in trades. Is this other teams that are trying to deal him, or were the Pacers shopping him? You know what I mean? It's like, I think that he definitely has some really nice intangibles. I think he's got a nice size and he's a 6'7" wingspan. I mean, he's got a lot of skill. I just feel like with McMillan, I mean, I felt like he was kind of in McMillan's doghouse. And had a very short leash. I feel like the whole player development part of things when they talked about Bjorgen was kind of hinted at that. I mean, I understand the whole McConnell thing. I feel like McConnell is limited in what he can do offensively, especially with, you know, spreading the floor, depending if Bjorgen is as analytical as he said, you know, how analytical is, you know, playing McConnell, you know, in those moments. I mean, I'm not sure if Aaron's a better fit at point guard. Obviously, he's got to work on his ball handling. But, I mean, if you look back, I think one of Aaron's best games last year was that game at home against the Toronto Raptors when they took him to overtime, and him and Miles were pretty deadly from three in that overtime. So I think that might be part of it. You know, that's a small sample size, but
I don't know. Aaron's just intriguing because I feel like he's one of those guys that could really sweeten one of the trade packages for either Miles or Victor, like we've talked about or we've speculated about all offseason. But it's just how high are the Pacers on him? And that's, I feel like they're pretty high on him.
Well, here's my other thing with that. If you're not going to play him over TJ McConnell, his trade value's down because people aren't seeing him play as much. Which, I mean, I could be wrong in that, but that's just my personal read. They're, like, if other teams would look at it and be like, well, why is he playing over a point guard who can't shoot? Like, I mean, like, I don't know. That's just kind of what it comes down to for me. And I think, I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum, but I'm excited to see what Nate does to – how great is it that we can say Nate still? We don't have to think of a new name.
I still picture him in my head.
I know, right? And I picture you talking to Vic and calling him Nate too. And
I did it to McDermott too, but thankfully I caught that one.
That's great.
And you said I did it again, which what made it even better. So, but
I just swore on the, I know I was, that was terrible.
It was great to see, but, no, I mean, it's funny though. Well, why do we have to get a guy named Nate of all the names in the world? It's like, I think this is actually Pritchard's first coaching hire. Cause I think McMillan was already hired when he took over. And then I think Pritchard was let go before McMillan was fired. So this is actually his first actual coaching hire. So it's interesting. I've read a lot about how he's been so enamored with Nick Nurse and what Toronto's doing. I mean, it's been 2 years, but in that sample size, I mean, coach of the year, Dwayne Casey was coach of the year when Nick Nurse took over. So Bjorgen taking over for the Pacers after his coach was named coach of the year. I think that's interesting. But anyway,
yeah, Nurse didn't get fired after he won coach of the year. So that's
true. True.
Sorry to shoot holes in that.
And they got Kawhi Leonard, right? But it's just fun to kind of throw that out there. But I know a lot of people are asking about the coaching staff. I feel like we'll find some news out here within the next couple of weeks. But Tony, is there anybody on your list that you think makes sense for this coaching staff?
I kind of shrug at that question just because I don't know, like, who's available. Like, are good assistants willing to move? You know what I mean? You know, and
Craig just did.
He did, and he got the bag from the Clippers. Man, Steve Ballmer is balling on his assistants with money. That's the thing is that I was going to add, and actually you bring that up. It's helpful here because they don't have Steve Ballmer, right? And not that the Pacers are – you brought up their payroll earlier, right? Like, they're not going to not spend if, like, the best person ever wants to come be an assistant, but, like, obviously price is a factor for them. It's like Chris Finch was just a candidate, and now Van Gundy, right, is probably going to want his whole staff thing in New Orleans. Is Finch going to stay there? Can the Pacers get him, right? He's got a good offensive mind. Would they be able to do that? I don't know what the deal with Dan Burke is, right? Scott Agnes reported that he might not be returning – or he isn't returning next year. I don't know what the situation with that is. And same thing for Bano and Popeye. So I really have no idea how to answer that question. If Chris Finch is truly available, maybe go get him. If some of the Heat guys are available, maybe go get them. But also, like, I don't know what Bjorgren's past is like. Does he like any of the guys he coached with the Suns? You know, like, is Jeff Hornacek going to just suddenly be a Pacers assistant? I don't know that kind of stuff either. So I don't have a good answer for that question. And I don't know what former players are interested in coaching the Pacers. Obviously, the only former player not named Chauncey Billups who recently said they want to get into coaching is Gary Payton. And Gary Payton is pissed at the Pacers for firing Nate McMillan. So he's not going to come be an assistant here. So I don't have a good answer to the question.
Mark?
If I said ditto, would that be terrible? No, I mean, I guess the only person who comes to mind is Chris Finch. I mean, I think that there's a chance with that. And like Tony said, with Stan Van Gundy in now, I don't know if he's going to keep Chris Finch around. I think there'd definitely be a lot of merits to bring in Finch. And again, Caitlin Cooper wrote some great stuff on that that you should read. I have no idea, man. One name I would mention if he wasn't the head of the G League Select team is Brian Shaw. I remember, you know, he was one of the guys who could have replaced Frank Vogel.
That's who I wanted to replace him.
Yeah.
See, I have a question. Either of you know how to pronounce the old Rockets assistant who's now a Pelicans assistant? Jeff
Bizdelic.
Bizdelic? Yeah, he's a good defensive coach too, right? So if Burke's gone and McMillan's gone, maybe you could snap him up from New Orleans too. I mean, he tried to retire 2 years ago, so I get why he might not be receptive to that, but he's another one from that New Orleans staff.
Yeah, well, I heard somewhere that I forget where I listened or I heard of that, but it was on a podcast, and they were talking about how Chris Finch and Nick Nurse actually have a pretty good relationship going back to, I think, coaching in the European leagues. Maybe I'm not really sure if they both did, but they were saying that Chris Finch actually could replace Nate Bjorgren on the Raptors staff, which would be intriguing as well. So yeah. that's what I heard. It was from somebody that would kind of have an idea of what they're talking about, but it's all just kind of speculation. What about someone the Pacers interviewed for a defensive-minded coach from Philadelphia, Ime Udoku?
Oh yeah, if he'd be willing to switch teams, he's a good coach.
Yeah, well, did he stay on? Did he stay on with Philly?
I have no idea. Yeah, he hasn't finalized his staff. That's a good one. I don't think. We could save David Vanterpool from Minnesota, even though he should be a head coach somewhere.
I think every single offseason there's coaching firing, and then they're like, we're interviewing David Vanterpool, and then he doesn't.
And then he never gets it. He's somebody he should definitely get a look. And I mean, Oklahoma City and Houston still have stuff up. Still have job openings, not stuff up. But I mean, yeah, if we could snag David Vanterpool, that would be huge. He's a really good coach, and players love that guy. Have you ever seen Damian Lillard goes to bat for David Vanterpool, which I mean, that speaks volumes. So, and also Ryan Saunders is probably the worst coach in the NBA. So I wouldn't blame David Vanterpool for anything going on in Minnesota. So all my friends who cover the Timberwolves do not have anything high to say on Ryan Saunders. So,
well, I guess we have a question. Somebody asked about David West joining as an assistant coach. I mean, I know that was kind of brought up when they said they were talking to West about, you know, the future of the team or whatever. I believe Pritchard said that in his first media conversation with you guys at the end of the season. So what are your thoughts on David West? I don't know if he'd want to do that.
It's kind of like Bjorgren. I have no idea. Right. Yeah, he's never done it before. I'm trying to piece together like legitimate thoughts about it. Like, I guess the way he played, he kind of played on some championship kind of teams, and he had that gravity as a teammate, right, where guys wanted to play with him, but I just don't know.
I mean, it's a terrible answer. I really in speaking to David West the one time I did, like, just incredible guy, man. Like, I could talk to that dude for forever. I don't have no idea about him as a coach. Obviously he's really tight with TJ Warren. I'm sure that he's had communications with some of the dudes on the staff as well. But again, like, I personally don't know how he felt about Nate getting fired. So I don't know, because you mentioned that with Gary Payton, Tony. I know that could potentially be a thing as well. So I'm not sure, but I mean, I'd love to see it. So,
yeah,
I don't remember who said it. I think it might've been Naptown Hoops or iPacers put something out about Roy Hibbert coming back to the Pacers, and he actually responded.
He has experience now.
Roy Hibbert to the Pacers. Who knows? Yeah, I mean, he coached Philly, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, if they want a former player, one of those two would be fine, right? But, yeah, it's interesting because I know, like, when you think about player or coaches they could add, like, it's just a crapshoot. And I've actually tried to do some research on figuring out who was on those G League staffs when Nate Bjorgren was head coach, and I – didn't do like thorough research, but I looked for like 10-15 minutes and I couldn't find anything. So I was just like curious if there's like just even a name out there, like someone that had been with him for a couple stops, you know, similar to how he was with Nurse, but I didn't see anything. So I don't really have too much on that, but let's just go ahead and finish some of these questions here before we get into our last segment where I'm going to play a little game with you guys. So the next question is from Destin Adams. He goes, who are five free agents that you think would fit the new look we are to have? So
five.
Just give your give one or two free five. Agents that you would like.
Okay, five free agents that would fit the Pacers. Anthony Davis, Gallant. I'm just kidding.
Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram. Five. So, okay, so do I have to like have a budget?
Do you want to do realistic free agents?
Yeah. Just give out like a realistic free agent, maybe with like the MLE or something like that.
Okay, Mark, go first.
Okay,
give me a minute to think,
Tony. So it's actually really funny because I'm working on a piece on the cap that I'm gonna drop tomorrow, but I actually don't know if the Pacers are going to be able to use the MLE outside of if they sign Justin Holiday to it, because the cap is totally screwed right now for the Pacers. Not like terrible, but I mean, they're really close to the tax. Like, it's ugly. Also, shout out Monte Ellis for being part of the reason why this team is so close to the tax right now. No, I mean, if so, like, let's say hypothetically, like, some trade happens, money opens up on the MLE, I think my number one target would be a guy like Paul Millsap's probably number two for me just because of his age right now. But I think as a veteran presence, I mean, we saw what he did in Denver. Everyone I've talked to in Denver has really positive stuff to say about how he impacted that locker room. I think he'd be a really great guy to get in here on like a one or two year deal. He's not going to be a super high level contributor, but I mean, for 20, sometimes 25 minutes a night, I think he'd be really quality. But again, if both Miles and Domas are here, I kind of question using the MLE on somebody who can't really play with both of them. So that would, my number one guy would probably be Mo Harkless, but I think he's going to be targeted by everybody because he's going to be a great MLE target. He's decent enough as a shooter.
You're gonna find someone else.
Yeah.
Damian Dotson is somebody I really like too, but he's like, he doesn't make as much sense for the team because they need a four, which means they probably won't end up signing a four because they haven't for the last 3 years. So, I mean, not to be a pessimist again, I'm just being mean. But I mean, I really like Damian Dotson had a really weird role in New York because nobody knows what they're doing in New York. And they have more power forwards and centers than this roster does. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys who are interesting, but nobody who's like going to be a necessary needle mover. And it's interesting to look at too. I'm giving you more time, Tony, as I prolong this.
You can stop anytime. I have,
The last thing I would say is just like, I just don't know. It depends what the team's trying to do under Coach Bjorkgren. That makes me wonder whether or not this team will even spend the MLE. Like, I think if they did, it would be to re-sign Justin personally. Like, I don't know if they will, go out of their way to get somebody with it, unless they break it up into multiple people to fill out the roster. But I'll talk more about that on an article. But yeah, you can go talk.
I also want to write about that. Okay,
I'm four. Getting to it first. So
you got four. Okay,
I have scrolled through the list and I have done a podcast on every position except for centers, because why center? But anyway, Paul Millsap, definitely. Mark said Paul Millsap. The problem is, right, if both centers stay, Bjorkgren kind of mentioned that sounds like he likes both guys and, you know, kind of too early to stay there. Maybe in a month I'll come back to that. But he's a great player. Not a good playoff player at this stage in his career, but a good player who could help 20 minutes a game in the playoffs. Dar Saric, I really like. The stretch four that they have always claimed to want but never actually signed, like Mark said. The problem is he's restricted, but I don't know what Phoenix is looking to do after their big bubble. Are they willing, trying to keep him on the bench there? He played backup center for them really well. I don't really know. Jay Crowder might be the dream target to me.
Do you think he's going to get more than the MLE? I feel like he might after the playoffs.
See, yeah. I think that the way the Pacers could get him, the problem is with Jay Crowder, right? Celtics, amazing. Heat, amazing. Grizzlies and Jazz, awful
exactly.
Player, right? Awful player. So it's such a huge risk getting him, but like, the Heat are going to offer him one for like 17 or 18, right? Because they want to have that sweet 2021 money. So if the Pacers offer 3 for 30, would he take that? I have no idea. I don't know Jay Crowder. And I had my last one is Derek Jones Jr., who I have a giant crush on.
How did I not say?
Yes.
Can play many positions, can defend many positions.
But he can't shoot.
Not a huge deal if he ends up benched for a few games because he's out of rotation. Not a big deal. He's not so good that he's going to pout about that. That makes it hard to sign him because you're saying you're not promised a role. I don't know if he's going to agree to that, but kind of a jack of all trades kind of guy who can play on the wing is kind of exactly what the Pacers need, especially if they lose Justin Holiday.
Yeah, this is a tough list because there's a lot of crappy free agents and it's like they're all just role players. So it's
And Mark said it best, like either they lose Justin Holiday and they're only looking at one position with their MLE, or they keep Justin Holiday on the MLE and then they can't get anything. Right.
It's hard
to really break down what they can get.
Any suggestions on like Chris Boucher or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson? Like,
I would just not
just because
Chris Boucher,
just because they're Raptors people. That's kind of where I was going. I mean, I like Mo.
I would throw
Harkless.
Minimum at Rondae. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would throw, if you could get Rondae at the minimum, I would definitely do that. He's worth it. But Chris Boucher, I think is going to get overpaid this summer just because he's a big who can shoot.
Here, that's the sales pitch, right? For Rondae coming, he comes in the door. And there's just 1,000 pictures of Jakar Sampson playing in the playoffs on the
he's
wall.
He's more athletic than Jakar Sampson.
And you say, we got this guy who wasn't even supposed to play for us to play many important minutes for us all season long. If you can do that, you're going to make a lot of money from the Pacers.
He would be I would move him into my list. He'd be a fantastic Pacer.
I like Torrey Craig. I always have.
I also like Torrey Craig.
With Denver, I think he makes a lot of sense. I do, too, like Derek Jones Jr. This is somebody I liked last year, and he went to the Clippers, Jermichael Green. Just somebody. And then
he's weird, though, because I talked to I don't know if you know Robert Flom, Tony. I think he used to work at Basketball Index. But, yeah, I was talking to him for my Clippers offseason pod. And Jamichael Green is just really funky, man. Like, I thought he was going to get a much bigger role with the Clippers this year, and it just never really happened for him. He's I don't want to say he's streaky. Like, he's a nice player, but I don't know if he's like – I feel like – I don't want to say the idea is better than the actual player, but he – I don't know. Something has kind of just kind of stopped him from being like a real crunch time player for them.
Pacers tried real hard to get him last summer.
Also, one thing with Torrey Craig, though, I really like Torrey Craig too, but I think it's important to realize, and I'm not trying, that made me sound like I'm like some basketball purist who knows everything I'm talking
about. You are.
But I meant to say, like, Torrey Craig, he's a really nice player, but he cannot guard anyone his size or bigger. Like, oh my God, it is a nightmare. And that would be like the idea of getting somebody like him is to guard somebody that size, because there's nobody on the team who can do that.
Right.
At a good enough level. And he just gets torched by guys his size. But I mean, he's great at like enveloping guys with his arms and keeping smaller guys at bay. But in terms of guarding the big wings, I don't know.
Well, that's a little bit depressing, because I was kind of envisioning him being more of a defensive presence out there. But
I
have one final guy I would like to throw in the mix. He was on my very short list of guys I really wanted last offseason too.
It might be the – go ahead, Jeff say it.
Green.
Oh, really? Yes.
Jeff Green would be really nice.
Jeff Green is ball five, one of my –
which will never happen because there's two centers on the team.
I think he's one of the most underrated players in the NBA. I understand why he's so up and down. But
yeah, he would be fantastic. What he did with Houston as their, like, quasi-five, like, their tallest guy on the roster at 6'8" or 6'9", like, he was amazing against Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean,
he was one of the best players in the Wizards a few seasons ago. Like, literally one of the best players on the team.
Yeah, well, and he was the second best player for the Cavs during the final LeBron Cavs run. So there's that.
Yeah, no, he was really good. I think another name that's kind of intriguing if he doesn't get his team option picked up is Bobby Portis, because I don't think he's going to make $15 million. I just think he's an okay player. He's young, and he's still got some skills. And then another guy that I would take a gamble on, who unfortunately didn't get his – contract picked up in Sacramento, is Harry Giles. I like him as like a under the radar type of guy, but all these players are like 10th or 11th options on our 10th or 11th in the rotation. So it's not like you're going to be swinging the, you know, you're not going to be hitting on anything. So it's not as fun to talk about.
It's either right. The problem with covering Pacers free agency is, one, it's kind of unfun for me to just guess who they're going to sign. But the problem with covering Pacers free agency is either you're just guessing, right, like you said, at the 11th man who's never going to play, right? So who's gonna take the role or the money? Or they make a huge trade, and then who the hell cares what we just said? We have to completely reassess what they need in free agency. So it's impossible to cover.
Yeah, I have, like, no idea what to write sometimes. I'm just kind of, like, staring at my computer. I'm like, well, 87 different things could happen this offseason, so I have no idea. But,
yeah. Well, we have one more question before I get into my segment with you guys, and it is from AJ Reese. He says, how much money do you think Sabonis would have gotten this offseason if we hadn't extended him?
Oh,
that's a good question.
I have no idea.
Just because the market value of centers isn't that high and he's still not a good defender. I mean, I feel like
who got paid last summer besides him? Sorry.
Last summer, let me look at free agency, but I feel like.
No, okay, see, the problem is, like, he would have been eligible for a 5-year deal. Right, so, like, is he doing that and getting less money in the fifth year? But I can't, that's like just too stupid to really break down. Is this actually 2019? Yes, Tobias Harris got paid last summer. Okay, I'm trying to think of a good comp for him that got paid like last summer. Okay, yeah, Nick Vucevic got 4 for 100. So about that.
Yeah, all-star year.
After his all-star year. He was a little older too.
Terrific numbers. Yeah.
Right. Vucevic is good. So
would you say I right now I'm trying to remember where I put him at, because I'm doing a top 100 player rankings thing just for fun, not because I think players.
God bless you.
You hate yourself, yeah, dude. Why?
I do hate myself. I'm the editor, so I had to put it together. but no, I think Vuce is like a little bit better than Domas.
That's fair.
Yeah, he's defender. He's a good passer. He's not as good of a passer.
Better shooter.
But, I mean, Domas is really good at stuff. Vuce is really good at stuff, too. I don't know. It's like
– That's my new analysis for free agency.
Vuce
is Harkless is good at stuff.
I am great at the reduction. But, yeah, no, I don't know. know. I really like Vucevic. It's funny, like, not to, like,
bounce around the question. What my answer is 4 for 100.
Yeah, I think you could get that. Like, I think the Pacers are lucky that they got him on the deal that they did.
I agree.
He's at a good value right now for sure.
Oh yeah, they I think they ended up making bank on that one. I thought it was interesting though during the entire negotiation process, he wanted to make more than Miles. That was what kept being reported.
Really?
I thought that's what they said. I don't
remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I don't remember who said it because it doesn't make me sound very credible, but I do remember reading that somewhere. It might have been Jay Michael who said it, but I don't want to like call him out for that, but it was like in the whole entire negotiation conversation, like he wanted to make more than Miles or around the same amount because I think the Pacers were offering him less and he felt like, you know, he was worthy of that plus. So that to me was interesting during all that, but they're being very similar and he's going to get all his bonuses, I believe, because of all the numbers he hit this year.
Yeah, he's an All-NBA bonus that he'll probably never get, but he did get his All-Star bonus, which is a lot of money.
Come on, why'd you have to sound like Nate Duncan there, Tony?
I mean, Nate Duncan was not as wrong as people.
No, actually, it's really funny. I agree. I totally agree. So.
Look, the worst All-Star ever. Yeah, that's the most.
Yeah, that was egregious to say.
Nonsense I've ever heard in my life. But like,
oh yeah, that was.
Yeah, Caleb, I forgot about this too. I don't know if. Like, there's a pretty real path that he'll never be an all-star again.
Oh, so. I don't think he'll ever be an all-star again right now. maybe a stretch to say, but, like, already there's going to be a lot of East players who are jumping close to him or passing him next year, and Kevin Durant's back. I don't see it. Call me crazy. I don't see it ever happening.
There might not be a Pacer that's an all-star.
To be fair, I also did not think Vic would be an all-star again, and he barely got it, so what do I know?
Yeah, he had a rough second.
I feel
year,
like
though.
He got grandfathered into that a little bit. a little bit, like definitely, but
fair. We keep talking nonsense. All right, Alex, I'm gonna play this game because you told
the
us
nonsense. Yes, the best part, man. Fun. Okay, yeah. So this is our game, and so I have about a dozen players that I'm gonna ask these guys. Do you think the Pacers have the assets to acquire this player? And if they do, would you make that deal for the Pacers, or would you like him on the Pacers? So we're not gonna get into I would trade him and him for him, but more so just. Would you think they have the assets? Yes. And would you like him on the Pacers? So I'll start with you first, Mark, and then Tony, you answer after. Number one on the list, Caris LeVert.
That's a great question. I mean, I think right now, like, I know you just said we're not going to do the who for who, but I mean, like, the obvious trade. The obvious trade is like Caris LeVert for Vic. And if I'm Brooklyn, I wouldn't do it. I think Vic is just as awkward of a fit as Caris, and I have more confidence in Caris LeVert to stay healthy, which sounds crazy considering Caris LeVert is one of the most injured players in the league. But I mean, after what he did in the bubble and being like a legitimate engine of a semi-decent team, considering what they had, I think his value is probably higher than Vic's right now. So I'm sure that there's an avenue where the Pacers, like maybe they trade like Vic and someone else or like draft capital, which I don't know what that really does for Brooklyn. But I mean, I guess that there's enough there for to make it happen. But personally, I mean, people think Caris is younger than he really is. I mean, Caris is 26, almost 27. He's almost the same age as Vic. So I mean, I think it'd be a nice move for Indiana, considering you'd have to move on from Vic theoretically. But arguably, if you're going to make a move like that, I'd rather just try and get a really high-end draft pick and see what happens.
All right.
I have a question about the game.
Yeah.
If that's okay. So the way you said it was, do they have the assets to get the player? So, like, if the Pacers trade every first-round pick they have available, and you know,
we broke the Stepien
rule. Obviously, they'll get Caris LeVert. Well, do you mean, like, a realistic asset package?
Yeah, do you think the Pacers would offer, let's say,
I thought you were going to come and be like, Karl Anthony Towns, and I was going to be like, ooh,
no,
I don't know.
No, but I'm talking, like, do you think, like,
we trade TJ Leaf? And
exactly. I was like,
Their roster with what kind of draft capital? You know what I mean? I don't know what draft capital the Pacers would give up. I don't really know why they wouldn't give up more if it you know, because they always kind of seem to, you know, pick late. They don't really have great picks. And if you could get someone.
I guarantee if they want Caris LeVert, they have the stuff to get him.
Yeah, well, some people, like I talked to Grady and he was like, yeah, you know, I don't think the Pacers have the assets to get him. He's like, it'd have to be really enticing with lots of picks and Vic. He's like, because that ain't going to
I don't know about lots of picks, like maybe no, 2 seconds like, or like a first or something, but still.
If they were dying to get Caris, they would trade lots of picks. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, they obviously have the assets air quotes, but the point of the activity is not that. The point of the activity is there a realistic trade that makes sense with the assets the Pacers would be willing to give up? I think so. Karras is really tough for me because I don't know how the Nets view him. If they think he's like good veteran piece for their going to be soon contending team, or if they're like, this is our best chip to get to being the roster that is damn good. You know what I mean? Like if they move him for Jrue, Vic, I don't, whoever becomes available, Bradley Beal, right? Then you're like, damn, you know, the Nets are really good. So I don't know how they view him. If they view him as the trade chip piece, they probably, Pacers probably don't have the stuff to get him because they would move him for something big. But if they view him as a kind of a vet guy that they would be willing to move for a better vet guy, yeah, they could get him.
Okay, so let's change it up then, like you said. So do we think the Pacers would – no, it's fine. Do you think the Pacers would make this trade? And if so, would you like them on the Pacers? So we'll just kind of do it that way. My wording, I was trying to think of it before we came on, so it was kind of rushed. But that's my preparation for you. So we'll go back to Mark, number two, Jrue Holiday.
I think they'd be crazy not to. Right now, I mean, it's interesting. Somebody asked me about this yesterday. At the moment, he's a better player than Vic, better defender. I actually think he's a better defender than Vic ever was, which sounds – that's really mean. Vic was a great defender, but you get what I'm saying. Also, how cool would it be to have all three Holiday brothers on the same team if Justin were to resign? If the Pacers could and would do it, definitely. I just don't know if they – I think it's more on New Orleans. Like, I don't know if New Orleans would be super open to trading him. And I spoke to Will Guillory of The Athletic. He's awesome if you don't know his work. He covers the Pelicans for The Athletic. He said that Jrue has actually like vehemently tried to not leave New Orleans. He's openly talked with the front office about not wanting to be traded. So I think it would be a lot harder to get Jrue than trade Twitter realizes. So
I agree. I think his value is higher than even myself originally thought now that I did a pod with Elliot Clow, who covers the Pelicans for the Believe in Sports podcast network. We tried to come up with Jrue trades for the Pacers, and I thought it was kind of impossible. So I'm going to go with no. They don't have the stuff to get Jrue. But to the second part of the question, yes, I would love him on the Pacers. He's a fantastic player.
Yeah, that was kind of a no-brainer.
I would also love Karras, but I kind of poked too many holes in your game. You need to answer the question.
You made the game better, right?
Sorry.
It's all about working here. Next, we'll go with Buddy Hield. Mark.
Oh, can I go first?
Yeah, Tony, go ahead. First.
Yes, they do, and yes, I do. I think Buddy
– I like Buddy.
A lot of off-court stuff makes it kind of nerve-wracking to trade for him, but damn, I think Buddy Hield is stupid good. So, yes.
I feel – see, I don't know,
insane, man. Insane shooter. Like, ridiculous.
Like, he's a great shooter, but, I don't know. I just – like, he's not – he's a fine secondary playmaker. He's – yes. I think it's so arbitrary for me to look at it like that. I mean, just in terms of what the Pacers could actually get back in trades for their guys, I think it's more if you can get a guy like Buddy Hield, that's incredible. Like, that's a way better than I think we could expect – for most of the trades that could happen. So, Buddy Hield's a good player. I just get stuck up with his – luckily his deal's the descending deal, so that's nice. The one good thing that Vladdy did. But, I don't know. If you could get him, that would be cool. But I still –
He can't guard a potted plant, so that's the downside also a problem of Buddy.
Well, if
Dan Burke, one more year of Dan Burke and Buddy Hield. Oh man.
Here's my
I'm all in and I'm still kind of in. I think he's so good.
The thing I get lost in with Buddy, and I thought about this a lot and just like doing like random draft Twitter stuff to like see how everyone views like trade value and stuff. Like, I really like Buddy. I think he's a great player. Obviously one of the best shooters in the league, can do it from anywhere. But I think if the idea is, okay, Buddy's starting the backcourt with Malcolm, or are you playing a three guard lineup? Cause if it's him and Malcolm, I don't want it, because you're going to get torched by any small guard that's ever lived. Like, Brandon Knight's going to drop 45 points on you even without legs. Just being realistic and honest, like, I think that would be a terrible defensive backcourt. And I don't think the Pacers would want to do that, but I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I like Buddy, and I feel like with Luke Walton, I don't know what kind of coach he is. I'm not a big fan of Luke Walton as a coach. I thought it was a terrible hire. I think Dave Yeager kind of wears on players too. And go back to the history he had with Marc Gasol. So, I mean, what kind of environment has Sacramento really created for Buddy Hield to kind of be acting out this way? You know, that's kind of where I come from. And I feel like Bjorgren, I mean, everything that we've heard is just how positive he is. I think it'd be kind of a breath of fresh air under his coaching style and just his demeanor. I mean, because if Buddy's got someone always positive in his ear instead of someone that's negative or just kind of blah and Luke Walton, I mean, that might be enticing. But let's move on. I definitely think Pacers have the assets to acquire this guy, but should they and would you like him on the Pacers? That is Gordon Hayward. We'll start with you, Tony.
These rumors are heating up. Yeah, Gordy's really good. This one's kind of back to my Drew one, where I kind of feel like that is the trade permutation possible. The Celtics will take Jeremy Lamb, maybe, but like as soon as you include McDermott, you're kind of launching a lot for Gordon Hayward. I don't know, but he's really good. Like his stat line's more unique than I think people all know. Between like his assists, rebounds, points, that like the removal of Stathead from Basketball Reference makes finding those unique combinations much harder. So sad. Yeah, I know. But yeah, Gordy's really good and can play multiple positions and is a good defender. Obviously, I love dudes from Indy. I think the trade is hard to come up with, but I think his fit's really good. You're coming up with a lot of guys that are good fits.
Yeah,
I'm just going with the hot names on the rumor mill right now. So I'm just trying to talk about guys that could be had.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Gordon Hayward. He's a really good player. I think it's difficult. He's like basically the Chris Bosh of Boston. Anytime anything goes wrong in Boston, it's Gordon Hayward's fault. It feels like, at least on Twitter. He's a really good player. I do wonder about like the age timeline a little bit, just because he's coming out of his prime as everyone's coming into their prime. But I mean, he could be that. Maybe he's like the less age advanced version of Chris Mullin for this team. I don't know. But I mean, I think he'd make a lot of sense is like you, that way you have good size still. I think that's really important, getting a three who can play with size to theoretically move TJ to the four, but I guess that's not going to happen now. At least not right away. It's much as it pains me. But no, I mean, I think they do have the assets to make that trade happen. But then I also wonder in what you trade, like how much better do you make Boston? Like, I don't know. I mean, in all the GMs,
if you make your own team better, I don't give a damn.
No, exactly. I know. I was about to say that. Like, in all the GMs and front office people I've talked to, like, you can't think like that. But then I just think, how good would that defense be with Miles, man? Like, that defense would be nuts if they had Miles as a rim protector. Like, they were a top five defense this year. And Daniel Tice is a really good player, way better than most Pacers fans give him credit for, because they always think Sabonis will just wash him, which does not happen. But Miles as a backline defender on that team would just be like absurd. Like they'd be probably the best defense in the NBA.
See, that's kind of what I've been thinking too. It's like, I think Pritchard, and you guys might disagree, but I do think Pritchard is a little bit hesitant to trade Miles in his own conference, especially with the age difference between him and Gordon, you know, being about 7-8 years difference. I think that makes a big difference in the whole thing. And I think Adam brought this up on your podcast, Tony. What about a sign and trade for Gordon Hayward? I think Bobby Marks or Zach Lowe, one of those two, actually brought it up, something like 3 or 4 years for $25 million a year, where it's a lot less than 34. Now, I know that's a lot longer, but I'm saying if the Pacers wanted to have Gordon Hayward for the long haul, your thoughts on maybe them doing a sign and trade, but at lesser money per year?
Yeah, it takes a lot of cooperation from a lot of people, which makes it a tough machination. It would be the requirements would be like the Celtics want stuff from, because like Gordy can't get to the Pacers without a trade, right? So the Celtics can demand the farm in this, even in this scenario where it's a sign and trade. The only way the Pacers can get him is via sign and trade. So the Celtics can go, okay, if you're not throwing in Aaron Holiday or a first round pick or whatever, like even if the salaries match, we don't care. We're not doing it because Gordon Hayward's good and he can be on the Celtics next year. So that's still a hard machination. But the problem is like you'd need two salaries of Lamb, McDermott, and TJ Warren. And they're not going to trade Warren, like obviously, but you need two of those three guys plus Turner to make the salaries work. And that's a lot of rotation stuff already. If the salary is less, then all of a sudden you only need one of those three guys. But then again, you need that cooperation from the Celtics, in which case more money. So it's tough.
Well, yeah, it's hard too, because like, do I really want to be paying Gordon Hayward $25 million when he's 34, 35?
If he's really good, why not? I mean,
he's not going to be really good when he's 34, 35. Like, we don't know that. I mean, we don't know that, but at the same time, just looking at trajectories of guys who are decently athletic, and his game is not super predicated on athleticism, but I don't know. I think you also have to look at, this team has to pay TJ Warren in 2 years. Obviously Vic's deal, I guess Vic isn't technically, wouldn't be part of that deal. Vic has to be paid this next year. I just think, you know, you look at what you're paying the top six guys on the roster. This team's so close to the luxury tax already. I just don't know how you make that work.
That's a good point.
Really weird.
Yeah. I mean, another thing too, it's like, even if you did the sign and trade, you try it out for a year, see how it is. And if you realize, hey, this isn't working, if he's only got, you know, 2 years left on his deal for $50 million or whatever it is, you could probably flip that too. I mean, I don't think that's a very hard contract to trade, especially someone like Gordon Hayward, who is, you know, very valued around the league. I think that's kind of where I stand with it. But this next one, I want to move on. I know we got a lot of players left to do. So Chris Paul, I'll start with you first, Mark.
All right, dude. Yes.
I'm torn on this, man. I think Chris Paul would be the best player on the team. That's on
the best player on the team ever of all time.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But not in his current state, no. In his current state, no. Reggie.
Yes,
okay.
Right,
Reggie
now.
At his peak would be better than
Tony. You're going to lose a lot of
followers. Okay. Let's be real. Reggie at his peak is better than this version of Chris Paul. But Chris Paul is definitely a better player than Reggie ever was.
Like, walk out of my room.
You're about to walk out of your room right now?
God.
I'm being honest. Like, I mean, Chris. Okay. Let's be real, though. Chris Paul, he was like a top 12 player this year, like a legitimate MVP case. I think. But my thing is just, I mean, this team is better than OKC was. I think if you look at the roster, like top to bottom, yeah. So you imagine, okay, you add Chris Paul to this, that team's like what? Like a 58-win team or something, and maybe they're definitely like a top four seed. But you look at everyone else, and I still just think, like, how does this team actually stack up to the top teams in the East if you make a Chris Paul trade? Then your championship window is like what? Like, or contention window, whatever you want to call it. What is it, like 1 or 2 years? So you're just really advancing your timeline. I mean, it would be the most non-Pacers thing to make a big splashy trade like that. So I would go for it. Personally, I think I love Daryl Morey because Daryl Morey just goes for it. Like, he does his job. He does not just sit on his hands and be like, well, my owner wants us to win games and not pay the tax. Daryl Morey doesn't care, except he quit because his owner doesn't want to pay the tax. If it could happen, heck yes, I would do it. I would definitely do it. Like, I just don't think the Pacers ever would or really even think about it. That was, Tony, a really long-winded answer.
Any other thoughts on this, Tony?
I've just always been a big Chris Paul fan. There was a not that long ago time where Tony East thought Chris Paul is the best player in the NBA, the entire NBA.
NBA?
I will not say when that time was. I will let the listener try and guess. But yeah, I've always been a huge Chris Paul fan. I actually have a Chris Paul jersey.
So. No, it's real if you have a jersey.
Yeah, well, I very rarely buy jerseys of players. I have a Chris Paul jersey.
Well, that might help fans go back to realize when you when you thought he was the best player, because jerseys were only around for a few seasons. So,
oh, no. I'm not talking about like the game. I'm just talking like a t-shirt with a number on the back. I get why that was confusing, though, because yes, the NBA did have those god awful shirt jerseys.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Chris Paul is someone that I would love on here. I think he fills two roles that Pacers really need. That's an alpha male and a winner. I know that he's, you know, never made it to the finals or like that.
Him, Warren, and Sabonis and Brogdon is,
that would be amazing.
So good. It's,
it
that
is would so be good. I mean,
my head is in my hands, dude. That is so good.
Everybody freaks out about the age. It's like,
I don't care who the fifth starter is. It could be you or me, or I don't care.
Let me look at what you
play.
OKC.
Make Jakar the fifth starter.
I totally understand the downsides of Chris Paul, right? He's a million years old. He is going to miss some time with injuries. His playoff pedigree, not that good. Never been in a conference finals. But
$40 million on his contract. That's the thing. It scares people.
But he's
the edge in the contract.
Exactly. If you want to win and you have the opportunity to move for Chris Paul, like, I think there's no way that the front office would even contemplate this with where they're at right now. But if you could get Chris Paul here. I mean, oh my God, that team would be so good. And he would be the best point guard this team has ever had, easily. I mean, by like a million miles.
Who's
like
he
this...
competing with?
You know, yeah. I mean? Well, some people would say Mark Jackson. I'd say Mark they're freaking crazy. Mark Jackson was that good. He was really not that good.
See, the trouble is this is a two-part question of Alex's game. Is do they have the stuff to do it? Miles and Vic for Chris Paul kind of seems like the Pacers are shooting themselves in the foot. I don't think they should do that. As much as I personally love it, I don't think they should do that. But then you get to like Vic plus Lamb plus McDermott, then the Thunder are out, or Miles plus something. It's kind of a hard machination to come up with. So that's why I don't think it'll happen. Well, beyond a million other reasons. But.
Yeah.
I think I came up with something where you could like get like Turner, Lamb. I believe it was like TJ Leaf, McConnell, because those are like, that's like $8 billion right there in expirings, and then maybe a couple picks. And I threw a trade out there, and I think it was Derek Schultz was like, this is – he's like, no, really emphatically. But, yeah, to me, I just thought, hey, I mean –
Oh, I saw Pacers. That. You got ratioed hard, man.
I did.
Did no one know that I'm, like, the world's biggest Chris Paul fan?
I did not know that. I feel like you've told me this before, but I didn't remember.
I knew you were my top five favorite NBA players for over a decade, yeah.
Yeah, I just – I'm so enamored with him as well. I love his game, and it'd be even cooler if David West was an assistant coach with Chris Paul.
All my
on the
favorite
roster.
Players are over
I actually,
my guards.
Is there beef there? I can't remember. I feel like
I don't know
because the Hornets tenure ended badly. Like that ended badly.
That's a long time ago. I forgot about that.
Gosh,
I remember
when that Hornets tenure ended. I was like 14.
Oh, that's I was what? Oh, I was like probably because that ended in 2007, so I was 10 years old.
No, David was on the Hornets in like 2012 or 11.
Yeah, because it came.
Okay, I was much older than I just lied. 14.
Yeah, I was about 18, but so the next one, this is a two-parter, so it's Andrew Wiggins plus the second overall pick from Golden State.
No and no.
I like the idea of a second overall pick, less high on Andrew Wiggins. Okay, so I got flamed for this recently in the Indy Cornrows comment section. I said that Andrew Wiggins is a good player, and just hear me out, okay? In terms of basketball talent, Andrew Wiggins is a very talented player. It's like it comes down to me. Partially, it's because Rudy Gay was my first favorite player. And Andrew Wiggins is Rudy Gay on steroids. So, like, he's a good player, but in terms of his role, he's, like, the worst at his role. So that's where I'm at. Like, I think he would make no sense on this team. It's cool that you get the second overall pick, but then again, like, you still have a bunch of dudes like – TJ Warren's 27 or is going to be 27. Malcolm Brogdon already is 27. Like you're the second overall picks, what, somebody like 19 or 20, maybe even 18. I like just in terms of where the team's at, I just don't think it really makes a lot of sense to get the second overall pick unless you're planning like a massive teardown.
Yep.
Because how often do you acquire a pick that high and then integrate them into a team that was arguably, you know, a 50-win team or like was on the cusp of being a 50-win team. Like that's not an easy thing to do. Often those guys are coming in as a primary option and they're ready to make mistakes and learn on the fly at the head of a team, like a guy like Trae Young. You're not going to get that with the Pacers. So I just don't think it makes a lot of sense to make that trade.
I'm getting a call from Darko Milicic.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, John Morant's calling too from last year. No, I'm just kidding. But
I mean, Ja's different, man. Like,
say Darko because you mentioned a good team having the second pick. But
no, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I think if you have a chance,
he was bad.
If you have a chance to get the second overall pick, that's something the Pacers have never really had. I mean, since like the 90s or the 80s, actually, when they drafted in the lottery and they swung and missed and traded their picks, they could have had Michael Jordan and traded that pick, you know? So it's like the Pacers have never really had this opportunity. And I think this draft is so weird. It's so hard to figure out what exactly, you know, the overall talent is. Like, sure, we can do evaluations, but I really think like not having March Madness really did kind of, you know, it kind of hindered people from really getting an idea of what they could get from certain players, especially high pressure moments. There's always people that stick out and end up, you know, catapulting up those draft boards. But, you know, I like Anthony Edwards a lot. If he was there at number two, it'd be really hard to, you know, turn that down just because I've seen so many comparisons to him and Victor Oladipo, actually. And I actually saw, I think it was Mike Schmitz from ESPN said that he has some James Harden and some Donovan Mitchell in him as well.
But the downside is they also said that he could, you know, they show some signs of like an Andrew Wiggins who's involved in this trade idea. So, yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons to it. I think that you guys make good points on the age and does it really fit for now. But I just think if you have the opportunity to go out there and acquire a number two overall pick, it's really would be really hard for me as a GM to turn that down because of the weirdness of this season, and the opportunity probably won't be there for a very long time to get into the top two. So that's where I'm at on that. But
I'll it's move, not the year for it for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And I'll move forward. This is my favorite person I'd like to see the Pacers acquire. Ooh. This offseason.
Okay.
I've floated it around a lot on my podcast. So it's Raptors free agent Fred VanVleet.
Mark, go ahead. Oh, wait. Sorry. The assets, like, if in a sign and trade, how are we?
Yes. Yeah, so my whole thing was like a sign and trade. Like, okay. I gave out two different options. I said on the podcast, I said if the Raptors really want cap space, they could take a flyer on Vic. He'd be a free agent next year. They'd have his bird rights. They could sign Giannis, and they could re-sign Vic and pair him with Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam, which I thought would be an amazing, you know, four right there. Or if they, you know, don't want to go with Vic, and you know, Sean Woodley was talking high about Turner, and, you know, Kelsey was talking high about Turner on our thing, I thought maybe they might be interested in Turner for a sign and trade for Fred VanVleet. So those were kind of my two thinkings there.
Yeah, Fred's good. Okay, so the Raptors would do this. Sorry, sign and trades, I always have to really think through, you know, why the team giving up the guy is doing it, because that is often the hardest part to materialize. So, like, if the Raptors like Miles more than Fred, then yeah, there's something to that, I think, for sure, because then all of a sudden they're using their bird rights on VanVleet to get a good player instead of letting him walk to, you know, it sounds like the Knicks and the Pistons are all over Fred. So using their bird rights to, instead of losing him for nothing, to get Miles is great. The flyer on Vic is an option too, although to me, Fred's better right now. So wouldn't they just
I agree.
Rather keep VanVleet at that point. But I get what you're saying, the expiring being a factor there.
Yeah.
I think if the Raptors like Miles Turner, there's something there. But that one's a bit harder to shake for me because the incentive for the Raptors is kind of tough.
Well, let me throw this out there too. I mean, it's just, you know, just kind of speaking out loud. But it's like, we know that Nick Nurse and Abe Yorgren have a good relationship. Yep. And if VanVleet said, hey, I want to go play with Coach Nate, I feel like I have a better opportunity there. And the Raptors are wanting to take care of their players because, you know, it's kind of similar with what Philly did with Jimmy Butler. You know, they did the sign and trade to, you know, get back Josh Richardson. Now, obviously that didn't work out for Philly, but if they were to say no, they could have, you know, blocked Jimmy from going to Miami. And then it's like, oh, then how does that affect player relationships with GMs? I mean, I get your side of it. Like, why would the front office do it? But with it being a players' league, if players are told no in a sign and trade situation, does that, you know, put a little bit of a damper on that team's front office?
Right. That's fair. I think Fred's good. And even if Vic's on the team, that three guard unit would work. Fred, Vic, and Brogdon, all good players.
Yeah. I just really like his game. That's
He's really good. We were born in the same town. So both of us obviously turned out to be very famous.
Is he from Rockford?
He is from Rockford, Illinois. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
So that's cool. I would ask him a million questions about that on day one with the org. I don't know why I'm tripping over my words. Like, he's good and is a good fit. And I think the assets make some sense if the Raptors have interest. So I guess yes and yes are my answers.
Yeah.
I don't know why I struggled with that though. That makes me think more, but go ahead.
You're just thinking about it.
Yeah. I would I think I'd say yes. He's a nice player. I still think my biggest thing is just this, the Pacers really miss a real dribble drive threat who can score at the rim and create stuff for others. And
wow.
Fred can.
Like Chris Paul.
Well, exactly. I like
Chris Kyle Paul. Lowry.
Or Kyle Lowry, yeah.
Yeah, but even Kyle Lowry's not great at it, because he's not hesitant at the rim, but he passes out a ton without even really looking at the rim. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would do it. I mean, he's a good player. You can never go wrong signing a good player. So
all right. So we got yes and yes. That's all I wanted. Thank you for helping build my confidence in this.
I do have to interject. I have a player that I do want to mention at the end if he's not on your list. Is that okay?
All right. If he's not on here, I got five more. I'll go through them quick because these are lower level players now.
Right, we just have to go with yes, no here.
Yes. All right. Next, Aaron Gordon.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, assets. No, I don't want him.
I'm split. I wrote a really long-winded piece with way too many clips in it about what Aaron Gordon is in the league right now and what he could look somewhere else. He's somebody, he's like very enamoring because you're like, well, what could he look like if he was in a better organization? But then you're also like, well, what would he look like if he didn't take 16-foot fadeaways when he's contested by three guys? So I don't know. And he's not as good of a defender as you'd think. He can be nice in one-on-one situations, but he's got bad off-ball tendencies. I mean, like Tony said, like maybe if he had a season with Dan Burke, that'd be cool. But I don't know. I think you're – I guess it just depends what you're giving up. But also, if, you know, Miles and Domas are both here, I don't know. And also, he operates from a lot of the same places that Domas does, so I don't know what their fit would be like.
Yeah, I'll say yes and yes. People know I like Aaron Gordon. I'm intrigued by his potential. Next, John Collins. Mark.
Oh, yes, definitely. If you're, like, I guess you're technically trading Miles. Like, the fit's still, like, a little bit murky because he's not a great perimeter defender. He's not really – I mean, he's a fine – he's a good weak side shot blocker, but he's not, like, an awesome defender. He's not really going to do a ton in terms of playmaking, but he's one of the best rim rollers in the league, one of the best lob threats in the league, and he showed that he's a really good three-point shooter and a willing three-point shooter. So I guess, like, you'd look at it and be like, oh, well, he's, like, he's a more realized version of Miles with less of the defense and more of the rebounding. So, I mean, I guess – yeah, I would do it. I mean, I really like John Collins minus Ped suspensions.
Right. Tony?
Yeah, he's good. It's not really a trade that I'm like, yeah, the Pacers get a lot better because they have John Collins now. So
yeah.
Yeah. I just heard his name was like possibly out there on the trade market.
Yeah, yeah. I figured it out. They trade TJ Lee for a time machine and then go back
to the
2017 draft.
I got a funny story to tell you after we get done with this off the air about that.
Next player.
All right, we got this is your guy, Tony, Kevin Love.
Oh, I love Kevin Love. Yeah, he's good. Not a good asset fit, though, so no trade. But, yes, I would like him on the Pacers.
You'd like him on the Pacers?
Yeah, Kevin Love's good, man.
Next to Domas?
Yeah.
The offense would be sick, but, dude, oh, my God. Teams would shoot, like, 68% at the rim the whole year.
Not with that new zone.
I think that is very, very dramatically underrated, Domas' rim defense.
That this was being a little
space
dramatic.
Defense, admittedly bad. Yes,
I'm being dramatic, but yeah, that would be the God. I would.
Yeah, I'm a Kevin Love fan. He's good.
So I think I'd say no. Just his age and where I mean his contracts. I'd say no. I think the team has assets to do it because Kevin Love is like almost a negative asset with his contract. So, but I'd say no personally.
All right, two more. This one should be really quick. Kelly Oubre. I know, Mark, you're a big fan of him.
Yes, ooh. Yes, and yes. If he resigns, if he's going to resign, wow. Yes.
I've never thought about this one. Well, kind of, but not in the context of, like, we want Kelly Oubre. Yeah, yeah, I'll go yes and yes as well. He's good.
All right, and then last but not least, Zach LaVine.
Sorry, you probably heard me snort. Just
who do I have to trade?
Well, it basically is like your Vic replacement. Would you be okay with him replacing Vic in that starting shooting guard position? I think I would be.
He's better than Vic right now. So
that is true. Super athletic. He has a good three-point shot. I mean, defense could be a lot better. I mean, he's not great, but he's an upgrade.
Timeline fit is good. That's an interesting one. I don't love Zach LaVine's defense or his inability to shoot. He became a good shooter last year.
Yeah, he shot really well last year. I mean,
yeah, I might be more into that than the perception of Zach. I'll go yes.
I think my biggest
yes, but I don't know how the Bulls accept that. But yeah. If they would. Yeah, that's right.
You gotta probably do a three-team trade of some sort. Yeah. Would be my guess.
Maybe yeah, I don't think the Pacers have the means to do it. But like LaVine's a good player, even given his warts. Yeah. But he's also a really bad passer, like a really.
Maybe
bad
something pass. That ends with like the Bulls getting Andrew Wiggins in the second pick.
Yeah,
a three-team trade that could make some sense.
Yeah, hey, I'm okay with that. I mean, I don't hate Zach LaVine. I know a lot of people are sour on him, but he's not really been in great organizations. I mean,
he's definitely better on his perception, I think.
Just don't put a time clock in the practice facility. So.
Absolutely. Well, that wraps up the segment. I know we've kind of gone long.
Wait, so okay. The one person. I have to do this. Just because I've been flowing this with. I don't know if you guys know Rhett Bauer. He's cool. He's on Pacers Twitter. I talked to him.
Oh yeah, I know Rhett. Yeah, yeah.
DeJounte Murray to the Pacers. There's actually legs there, and I really like the. What do you mean? Why?
Why are there legs there? Do I not know?
Like, I mean, there's not like a trade that's going to happen, but
you look at Derek White was way better in the bubble. They have like way too many guards to actually play all of them. I mean, Keldon Johnson is going to be a three. Lonnie Walker still needs to find his role there. I think there's a real chance that they could be willing to part ways with DeJounte Murray. So I don't know. I mean, you could theoretically, like, if they wanted to let Poeltl walk and they, which I don't think they will, but like you could, if you entice them, we're like, okay, we'll trade Miles Turner for DeJounte Murray and like cap filler or something.
What?
No what? Way. I would maybe do Goga.
You would not trade Miles for DeJounte Murray?
I don't think so. No, I don't think I would.
DeJounte Murray's? Am I missing something?
Have you never watched DeJounte Murray play?
I yeah. have very.
I'm he's not, so I'm, good.
I'm not that he's impressed. Not he's perfect. All right.
He has a lot to work on. Okay.
You just said that a team's going to try to play Derek White and Lonnie Walker and Keldon Johnson over the guy. He cannot possibly.
No, they're not going to play them. They're not going to play him over him. I mean,
I DeJounte like DeJounte. He's a scrappy as hell defender, but
yeah, he's all right.
I like defense too much.
Even that much better than Aaron Hadde?
What? Oh my! He's definitely better than Aaron.
Are we just saying that because he's on the Spurs?
No,
I mean, we'll be saying another that thing.
I mean, if Aaron Holiday was on the Spurs, we'd be saying the same thing.
Yeah, wow, Mark, this is a take.
I think that it's,
man, you got dragged for Andrew Wiggins. We're about to drag you for
drag me to hell. Why not? We're on the movie.
I have never really thought of a guy for this segment. I was kind of wishing now that Mark said he had a guy, I wanted to
come on, Tony. Think of
had
something.
To one up me.
Well, Chris Paul is my dream.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Lowry's enticing too, but I mean, it's an expiring, so I don't think they're going to get rid of him.
All my crushes are players that Pacers fans would hate. Like, I love John Wall. No one wants him.
Yeah, well, Alex, what about Sabrinas, John Wall?
Alex Sabrinas plays in Europe. Gortat retired, and they don't need a center. So none of my NBA crushes make any sense.
Well, talk about John Wall. I mean, would he make sense?
No.
I mean, no. At all?
Not at all.
Not at all.
My favorite player ever, but no, he does not make any sense.
I know high school mixtape is the best mixtape of all time. Better than Austin Rivers. I don't care what people say.
All right. Well,
Carr is obviously number one, but yes.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this lengthy episode. If it takes you a couple of days to listen to it, we apologize, but not really.
Sorry.
We hope you guys enjoyed the content. It's a lot here. I didn't know we were going to go off on all these tangents, but hey, it's fun. And you don't get this very often. So Mark, you want to plug anything before we sign off?
My friend Cody Hodek wrote, I know it's not a Pacers player, Ben Wallace.
Oh,
incredible, incredible player. Forget the fact that he was really heavily, heavily involved in the Malice at the Palace, if you can.
He started it.
Ron started it. But, my friend Cody Hodek wrote a really good piece on Ben Wallace, like 4,000 words, 40-plus clips. He does work for Thinking Basketball with Ben Taylor, so definitely go check that out. It was a really, really good read if you enjoy, like, player analysis.
Okay. Tony, anything for you?
Not really. I've got an interview coming with a former Pacer soon, but I don't want to spill it.
All right. Well, there you guys have it. Be on the lookout for all that stuff. And make sure you go check out all of our podcasts, Indy Cornrows, Locked On Pacers, and Setting the Pace. Give us a rating, interview, subscribe, let us know what you like and what you don't like. But be nice, be kind. We're doing this for you guys. So we will talk to you all next week. Peace out, Pacer Nation.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.